C1M, number 13B.
The highest nature of man is that which must rule the lower, and so we come to the sixth subject. What are in that sixth subject those qualities now which are necessary to uplift the standard of man? And here it is, as I have said before, the quality in each one of us to understand God metaphysically. That's what he proposes here, as the sixth subject. The first we had, just to recapitulate, the first we had the wedding of ourselves to a law-abiding attitude. Second, it was the wedding of ourselves to pure affection. Third, it was the wedding of ourselves to selflessness, to a unity of interest, to altruism. Fourth, it was the wedding ourselves to a fundamental scientific basis, to scientific foundations, instead of wedding ourselves to persons and personal things. Then the fifth was wedding ourselves to always higher and refined qualities, the ascendancy of good over evil, the ascendancy of the spiritual over the animal, always that drive to go higher in the spiritual scale. And now in the sixth it is wedding ourselves to a metaphysical understanding of God, that's the Savior. Here comes in the Savior. Because, why is it the Savior? Because we unite ourselves with something which is much higher than man, namely with God. And so let God rule the situation. And let God, wedding with God, lift us out of any human proposition. So here we get all those terms or demands which says begin to learn God arise, to be wise, understand the signs of being, discern the things, regard life more metaphysically and so on. And on the other side, the negative, where she always says, well, what we must get rid of is ignorance, is erring human concepts, false views of life, believing instead of understanding, or just doing what usage, what common sense usually does. The Christ doesn't know common sense. The Christ truth does not agree with common sense. And what does she say in this sixth subject, what such an attitude accomplishes? She shows that such an attitude accomplishes that we unite in one person, man. That man is only one man. She speaks here about to unite in one person masculine wisdom and feminine love. She says that really a union is only the union of parts, that it is the union of all qualities. And so let no man put asunder what God has joined together. What has God joined together? God has joined together man, the compound idea man, the generic term man. Let not that be put asunder into people. Let not the term generic man be put asunder into a man and a woman, into feminine and masculine, into people and persons and so on. What she shows here is that we begin to see that there is man, one man. And through that, he shows something happens in the universe. The more as we understand scientifically and metaphysically that there is only one man, as we wed ourselves to that unity, something happens, life and truth. Life and truth always happen. He says that really has an exalting influence for man. But it has an exalting influence insofar as we begin to see, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. For he shall through that understanding they begin to see that man is just complete, that man is God's man. That's what he calls here. He speaks here all about that higher nature of man, which is God's man. That God is his father, that life is the law of man's being, that spirit is man's primitive and ultimate source of being, that man is the offspring of spirit. You see, now we come always to man as the offspring, as the effect, that has the idea of God. That God is the father of all men and so on. And in the same way, as he shows, you see, as he shows, that we, you see how we come nearer to the spiritual ultimate. That in through that ascendancy of mentality and of thought, we are ready to spread our wings heavenward and say, then if man, if our progeny in the fifth chapter, if our progeny are really characterized, are really the product not so much of the material propagation, but of the mentality, of the mental attitude of the parents, of the mental attitude of the surrounding, of the mental attitude of the educators, of the mental state of whatever goes on around them. If therefore the mental is more important, then let's have that mental spiritual. Let's then have that mental in the purest sense as the understanding of God. That's the sixth aspect. Then you begin to reach out and say, all right, then whatever has happened in my human life, whatever my parents were, my ancestors were, whatever happened in my life, whatever my education was, whatever happened in my youth and at my birth, in my prenatal state, and so on, in my school, in my life, in my business life, whatever happened up to now, that has a savior. If I reach out for God, for an understanding of God. And if I reach out for an understanding of God, then I have man. Then I exalt man, true man. That man, which is free from body, free from sin, sickness, and death. That's the man she presents here in the sixth subject. Now, in this way, we begin to feel that each one of us can be the savior to himself and to the world. See, in this moment we begin to realize that whatever my human life was and now is, whatever the claims of the material and the human past is, all that doesn't fall into the scales, doesn't weigh anything in the scales, if I turn to God, and if I turn to God and see that man is God's man, and that my spiritual understanding of God is freeing me from all the claims of ancestry. And that's what he shows through the substance. Through the substance, you remember, he shows for the first time here in this chapter that we should turn to the divine mind instead of to the body or to erring human concepts. To the divine mind, that the divine mind should take care of our body. That's the first time he says that. Then in the second subtone of spirit, he says, and through that understanding, we begin to see that the good and beautiful constitute our ancestry, that we are born from the good and pure and spiritual, and that our origin is not in brute instinct, nor does it pass through material conditions. He says there, oh, I begin to be freer and freer as I see that all that happened in the past was nothing but spirit giving birth to spiritual qualities. That spirit was giving birth always to spiritual qualities, and that is the only real. And that I have never passed through a material condition. That I have never passed through a material procreation, never through a material prenatal condition, never through a material birth, never through a material education, never through a material surrounding, never through a material schooling, never through a material experience, never through a material world, never through anything material. But all that really is, that's my Savior, my truth. All that really is that spirit is giving birth to itself. And that's my development, my unfolding. And so, in the third subtone, he shows that in that measure, as I begin to understand that, I begin to lose that sense of discrimination of sex. That I begin to lose that sense that there are a man and a woman, and that the man is a different classification as the woman, and that therefore the man has more rights than the woman, or the woman more rights than the man, or that discrimination of man and woman falls away. And so in that way we begin to contribute to the world by establishing within us and others a sense of the equality of the sexes, the equality of men and women, the equality of the different colors of black people and white people and yellow people, the equality of men in general. And so I contribute, as he says there, really, I contribute there to achieving a generation which is able to, how does she say there, to elevate society in general, the achievement of a nobler race for legislation, a race having higher aims and ambitions. See, through that sense of soul which tells me that the identity of man is man, that the identity of man is not a man or a woman, but that the identity of man is man. And therefore I begin to establish more and more in us in a natural way the equality of all men, and therefore builds the basis for a higher generation for legislation, which is based on a better equality of men and women. Then in the fourth subtone, he shows that through that understanding, you see, of what man, the generic term man means, which is free from narrowness, that has an effect, namely, that it binds me to all men. That it binds me to all men, which is actually freeing me from that narrow sense of human sense of marriage, which binds me only to one person or to one family. The more we begin to realize with all men, and not only with one person, and that liberates and frees us from all that which wants to dominate a person, which wants to restrict the relationship to one person. It frees us from personal domination. is that passage where she shows that benevolence should not be hindered. Really, that man is here for all men. That man is here for all men. We go against the advancement of the spiritual good. We go against the advancing spiritual idea. We go against the deeper nature of man. If we restrict man to a little hole, if we restrict man to a little circle, all that wants to restrict and limit and make small goes against the nature of man. And therefore, the moment something comes in which wants to restrict man to a single relationship, to dominate man to a little field of activity, to only some aspect of his life, everything that wants to restrict that naturally brings this unity, this cord into a marriage. Marriage, a home, he says, should only be the center, but not the circumference of our being. Home should be only our secure and safety spot, so to say, where we always can come back and find our safety and our support. But our view, our eyes should always look outward into the world and not into a narrow little circle. This is really here breaking up the sense of clique. Man is universally wedded. He's wedded to all men, and therefore it breaks up the sense of forming cliques.